we welcome in from Business Insider, Dave Leventhal. Dave, welcome. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Go Bills, even though we're, you know, not going to have the enjoyment and the pleasure of a victory until tomorrow.
Next Sunday is going to be so weird because we'll finally have a 1 o'clock game.
Hey, look, they could play at 2:30 a.m. on Wednesday mornings every week for the rest of the year, and as long as they get a W at the end of it, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, right before we had you on, the mayor of Buffalo, Byron Brown, promised us that Super Bowl parade downtown is going to be the biggest parade we ever saw downtown, and I believe him 100%.
I mean, a buddy of mine, Ernie Green from North Tonawanda, and I have been talking about that parade for literally 25 years. So the mayor better make that happen because we're both going to be back for it.
Oh, I think it'll happen. I'm quite excited for it. Now, Dave, you guys over at Business Insider have launched the special Red, White, and Gray. I've been looking into it. You've been tweeting a lot about it. Tell us the general idea of this special Red, White, and Gray from Business Insider.
Yeah, it's a project that has more than 30 deep dive articles, data visualizations, videos, and the bottom line is this. It will come as no surprise to you that America's leaders here in Washington, D.C. are pretty old. But what we're finding and what our data analysis has shown is that this is actually the oldest Congress that we have ever had in the history of the United States. And the gap between those who are leading and those who are being led is as wide as it ever has been. And Joe, it's coming at a time when you have a number of different issues of profound importance to the nation. That might be technology, it might be social issues, civil rights, energy, the environment. Those are largely in the hands of people who are in their 70s and their 80s. You know, you just look at the Democratic leadership in the House, for example. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, James Clyburn, they're all over the age of 80. And it raises the question, which we explore in this project, of what are the costs? What are the benefits and what are the dangers? So we've had a whole week of going through this, and we've gotten a ton of reaction. And a lot of people in a poll that we just published over the weekend, most Americans, whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, or whether you're an independent, there's actually unanimity around the issue of feeling that the government, in their opinion, is too old, and that something should be done about that, whether that's age caps for Congress, term limits for the government, for elected office, that those are viable options in their opinion that they think should be explored.
You know, you mentioned that polling, Dave, and I was kind of surprised by this. One of the questions is, should the president have to take a physical and mental assessment in order to serve in office? And I find the older you got, the more people said yes.
Yeah, and that was probably one of the more surprising aspects of this very multifaceted poll that we did with Morning Consult, a data and polling company that we worked with on this. And yeah, if you're 20, 30, you're less inclined to think that that should be something a president should have to undergo. If you are 45 or up, you think that's a better idea by and large. And what is truth right now is that the president is under no obligation to have a physical exam or a mental exam or anything of that sort that is publicly released or even that happens in the first place. Now, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and you can go back to Barack Obama and George W. Bush, they have released information periodically from time to time about health assessments that they've gone through. But again, they're under no obligation to do so, and oftentimes have been criticized for the scant information that was actually produced when the public version of those medical examinations were indeed made public.
You know, and it's interesting, the percentage in favor of a minimum and maximum age, members of Congress are second on the list to pilots. Now, I realize that, you know, member of Congress, president, not the same thing, but, you know, we are talking about leaders in Washington. 75% of those polled say there should be a max age in the member of Congress. But there's a good chance that in 2024, we will be voting between two main party candidates, both in their 80s.
Yeah, and there are retirement ages, mandatory retirement ages for lots of different things. That includes, you just mentioned it, pilots. military generals, justices and state Supreme Courts. So it would be a political office or a governmental office that applies to in certain states. But Congress, definitely, you can serve till you're in your 90s. Think back to Strom Thurmond, the senator from South Carolina. He served and passed his 100th birthday. And we have an upcoming story that's going to discuss the federal judiciary, which talks in great detail about federal judges who are serving into their 90s, or even in one extreme case, until he was 104 years old, hearing cases. And, you know, on one hand, people might say, well look, you know, this sounds kind of ageist, and this I don't like the idea of actually having any type of maximum age limit for a public office or for a governmental office. And a very viable opinion. At the same time, too, there are many, many questions that have arisen about government either being out of touch or people serving, you know, frankly, as thorny as an issue as it is, past their prime. And we've seen this, for example, with many, many reports about Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat of California, who very objectively has been struggling with certain aspects of her job, or being able to remember different things that are going on in the course of her service in Congress. So it's uncomfortable. This is not an issue that makes people feel particularly good by any measure. But at the same time, too, this is our government and these are our leaders. And if we are not getting the best from them, then it's a very legitimate question to raise in the course of doing kind of journalistic work that we're trying to do.
And it's not all members of Congress, Dave. You guys also spoke with former members of Congress who decided, hey, my age is starting to show. Maybe it's time to step down. You talked with them, but what they say seems very different than what current members of Congress say when age is ever brought up.
Yeah, there's a wild difference of opinion even among members of Congress or former members of Congress who are now either serving or who had served and are in their 70s or 80s. Some say, no, you shouldn't limit me. And Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, who is 88 and running again, I mean, he's told us straight up, I think one of my greatest advantages, I'm paraphrasing him here, but I think one of my greatest advantages is that I have seniority. I have experience. I'm going to do a great job for my constituents, and they should vote for me as a result of that. We did talk to other members, former members of Congress, who stepped away kind of in their political primes because they felt like, well, you know, it's not worth it anymore, or I could be doing a better job or providing a greater value to society or to my state or country by doing something else, whether that be in academia or advocacy, or just simply retiring and enjoying their lives. So that's definitely a very interesting kind of cross current there that we've heard from members. And I would add, too, that my colleague Kimberly Leonard, one of our reporters who's based in Florida, she's writing about lots of very interesting stuff, including Governor Ron DeSantis all the time. She wrote a fascinating story about the medical aspects of this. And there are definitely people who are in their 80s, neuroscience backs this up, who are called superagers. And, you know, their brains literally function differently than the brains of the average 85 or 90-year-old. And it gets into really the medical and the neuroscience behind that. In a way that I frankly had never even known before. And I think a lot of people will be surprised by the results of what comes out of Kimberly's findings in her article.
Dave, I wonder, to that polling, you know, that showed that a majority of Americans think there should be an age limit. If party leaders have reacted to this, again, thinking of not only the midterms coming up in a few months, but, you know, the presidential election in 2024, it seems like this is the language of most people. Like, hey, you know, when you get to a certain age, maybe it's time to you know, step aside, say, hey, what I've done, I've done. But we get to that election and more times than not, we have two people who, I mean, I hate to be mean, but are past their prime.
And there's reasons for that. Number one, there are no term limits, of course. If there were in Congress, then we would have a very different situation, and you would have to step away after a period of time. Might be 8 years, 10 years, a dozen years, but not something that Congress right now is giving active thought to, even though there have been pieces of legislation, both from the right and from the left, that have said we should pass a law to limit Congress from serving forever. We should pass a constitutional amendment, but it's pretty much been DOA in terms of those pieces of legislation. And so you know, where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us in this kind of current situation. Money is a huge issue. We showed statistically that if you are an incumbent, you are able to raise a heck of a lot more money on average than your challenger. And, well, what happens? That money gives you an advantage. And between about 85 and 95% of members of Congress, when they run for re-election, they win. So it's very difficult to knock somebody who's already there out of Congress. And then gerrymandering is an issue, too. And if you have a district that is gerrymandered to either favor Republicans or favor Democrats, then it's going to be that much more difficult for somebody from the opposite party to go ahead and knock you out there, too. So there are sort of these structural, intrinsic reinforcements, if you will, Joe, that really make it, again, that much more difficult for voters to kick somebody out who's already in. So that's definitely an issue that kind of undergirds all of this.
Well, Dave, we look forward to continuing to see this. Like I said, those poll numbers overall didn't surprise me. What surprised me and what I think is very telling are the people who have age, the people who are in their 60s and 70s, are the ones who are saying, hey, you know, if you're gonna be the president, you should have to go through these checks. And who else would know than people who are the same age as the people they're talking about? That's what I took away from it.
Yeah, and some of the feedback that we've gotten has been along the same lines. Not surprised by the overall findings, but surprised by, when you dig down a layer, what exactly is being said by whom.
Now, I have to say, another part of this is something, an article that you tweeted out a few hours ago, and something that we just dealt with, not for the same reason as was mentioned in this article, but special elections. And the title of the article is "Special Elections Are Confusing, Chaotic Mess That Bleed Taxpayers." Now, we just saw this in Tom Reed's district, and you want to talk about confusing, Dave. I mean, you were voting for the old districts last 5 months and then the new districts primaries. But these are becoming more and more regular around the country, these special elections in between the two-year elections.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this article from Grace Panetta, another one of my colleagues, explored, was the fact that the trajectory of special elections in terms of their frequency has been going up. And we explore the reasons why. Now, you mentioned one reason which didn't have to do with one of the other points of all of this, which is somebody stepping away because of kind of a difficult political situation that they found themselves in. But overall, we found that special elections, and this really kind of struck to the heart of our Red, White, and Gray project as well, these special elections could have been avoided. And it's because somebody either was serving in office and they were aged and they became unwell and they had to step away, or they died in office. We saw this with Representative Don Young, who was 88 years old and was on a plane going back to Alaska, which he had represented for the better part of 50 years, and he died on the flight, which has caused a special election that had, very similar to the district in New York that you just cited, four different votes that have taken place in the span of about 6 months or will come November. And this is the one with Sarah Palin, and you might have heard of Santa Claus running in this race. I mean, yes, it has been absolutely chaotic. It is very expensive. It is very confusing. Taxpayers end up paying more money than they would have otherwise because of these special elections. Now, special elections can't be entirely avoided, and you want to have a special election if a seat opens up, because otherwise you're not going to have representation in Congress for your district, for your area. But at the same time, too, if you're having them over and over and over again, and they could be avoided, then that's something that the people may want to also take into consideration in the sense that it is going to lessen the confusion and it is going to lessen the cost, and government is ostensibly going to run a little bit more efficiently as a result.
Now, speaking of politicians in their 80s, the president is heading over to the UK for the funeral of Queen Elizabeth, correct?
He is, and we wrote a incredible article, if I may say so myself, about Joe Biden, who's going to be turning 80 later this year. If he is elected in 2024, he will be 82. And if he serves to the end of his second term, were he to get one, that would be in 2029, and he'd be 86 years old. So he is going over to with Jill Biden, his wife, to to mourn the loss of Queen Elizabeth II, and in what is going to be, I would imagine, one of the more dramatic international moments that we've seen in many, many years, given that many of us have only known one Queen of England throughout our entire lives, or our parents even have known only one Queen of England throughout their entire lives. So for her to, of course, have died, and for her funeral to be coming up just tomorrow is going to be a very momentous and dramatic moment, for sure.
Now, what is this this memorial that is happening Wednesday that I saw former President Trump was invited to? It's a stateside memorial for the Queen?
Yeah, you know, I am definitely not the authority and expert on the British monarchy here, but that does appear to be the case. I don't have all the details about this, but what has been happening, at least in Buckingham Palace and among the royals here, is that there have been a whole series of different events and commemorations that have had invites for different people at different times, and that even includes members of the royal family itself. So it is very much steeped in tradition. It is steeped very much in the internal politics of the royal family, and it's all, of course, playing out, Joe, on the most international of scenes, given the sort of international obsession with the royal family as it is.
And I can't let you go without asking you about something we talked in the first segment today, and that is undocumented immigrants being sent to Martha's Vineyard, being sent to the vice president's residence while she was right here in Buffalo, Dave. And it sounds like this is going to continue.
It very much is going to continue, and it's going to be driven by many of the governors, or at least some of the governors in border states, whether that be Texas or Florida or others. And, you know, Joe, I mean, it's a very dramatic situation in and of itself. Obviously, the governors like Ron DeSantis most recently are trying to prove a point and trying to say, well, look, you know, all you liberals in Martha's Vineyard, well, you know, you you're going to love what's going to happen when undocumented immigrants come and are on your play island up in Massachusetts. But it was very curious to see what happened there. Now, Martha's Vineyard, I don't know how many people have been there. I've been there a couple of times for covering political events, and it's sort of a tale of two worlds. You have the people with their giant yachts and their multimillion-dollar houses who come there for the summer and party it up, but you also have year-round residents who are there, and they're not at all wealthy. In fact, in many cases, they're the people who are serving, you know, lunch at restaurants and who are doing the work of what's a very down-to-earth community if it's December or whatnot. And, you know, it's been curious to see how they've reacted and opened their arms to those who've been flown to their island and you know, effectively taking care of them. Here in Washington, very similar. You know, there's a lot of neighborhoods here in Washington, D.C., even though it's a seat of power, that are very modest or very poor, and same thing that's been happening. So it's a tough little situation because oftentimes I talk to voters, I talk to people who are like, well, we just can't have this happen. We have to close our border. We have to deal with this influx of people who are not legally supposed to be here. And that kind of, you know, on a Sunday morning like it is today, you might be going to church or coming back and thinking of, you know, passages that you've heard from Exodus or Deuteronomy or Leviticus or Jeremiah, or probably the most famous one from the book of Matthew. You know, I was a stranger in your land and you invited me in. So there are definitely religious overtones to this. There are definitely political undertones to all of it. And we're dealing with people here, people who may come from another country, may not speak the language that we speak, but at the same time, too, are often fleeing very, very harrowing situations, and particularly Venezuela, which by all indications is a failed state among failed states. And people are just trying to do what is best for their family, even if it's illegal in the eyes of the law here in the United States.
Hey, beside the Bills game this week, anything we should be looking forward to out of D.C. in the coming days?
Well, this is not fun, but nevertheless, something that the government is going to have to be dealing with, which is funding the government. I know we seem to talk about this every 6, 8, 12 months, but this is another situation that is going to be similar to the ones that we have had many times in the past, where Congress is going to have to come together and at least temporarily figure out a bill, a provision to go ahead and keep the government funded. And if it doesn't, then we could be very much talking about potential partial or full government shutdowns again. Now, the word is, when we talk to the folks that we do, that both sides are at least looking to work together to try to avoid this and try to at least kick the can, proverbial can down the road to pass the election in November. But it's never a great situation when we're effectively playing a game of chicken with ourselves here, and nobody really wins if you pass that deadline.
Dave, you got to be feeling pretty good today after that Syracuse win yesterday.
I'm a proud member of Orange Nation and a graduate of Syracuse University, being 3-0 and feeling like football is kind of back in a way that it hasn't been since I was there in college. That is feeling pretty good. So not a bad football weekend for us who got the Buffalo Syracuse connection.
My buddy has seasons at the Dome, and he was trying to find six wins, you know, to get bowl eligible. And now he's like, I found the six wins, and Notre Dame might also be beatable after what we've seen for the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty good after three games to be halfway to that magical six number. So we'll see how it keeps going. But feeling pretty good right now.
All right. And Dave, do you think the Bills will have a good chance in Orchard Park tomorrow?
I think the Bills are going to be 2-0 when we are all going to bed at 11:30 on Monday night, or some of us perhaps 2 or 3 in the morning, because we are just that excited.
I know. Hey, the good news for me is I'm going to get almost no sleep on Tuesday. However, I get to call you because you'll be on with Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski Tuesday morning.
I'm sure that's going to be a lit conversation that we have, Joe, on Tuesday morning. I have no doubt about that.
I look forward to it as always. Dave, have a great Sunday afternoon. I thank you for joining me.
You as well. Thanks a lot, Joe.